Welcome to NeuroNavigators, a MedBridge podcast where we conquer challenging topics in neurologic and geriatric rehabilitation. Our aim is to deliver actionable takeaways for physical and occupational therapy providers like you through captivating discussions with influential practitioners in our field. To receive continuing education credit for this episode and access bonus resources, make sure to check out MedBridge.com. Hello, I'm your host, JJ Mauder-Tinney, a physical therapist with over 30 years of experience working with people with neurologic deficits, as well as the aging adult population. I have multiple certifications, including being a board-certified clinical specialist in neurologic physical therapy and a certified exercise expert for aging adults. Hello, everyone. I'm excited to be joined by Jamie Haynes, an expert in the area of treating people with neurological deficits. Today, we will be diving into the AFO-FES topic, including highlighting the clinical practice guideline, as well as actionable takeaways you can implement right away. Welcome, Jamie. I'm so happy you're here with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yay. Could you get us started by sharing a little bit more about yourself and how you ended up falling in love with all things neuro?
Well, my journey started way back when I was in high school. I have been a proud neuro nerd for a very, very long time. When I was in high school, I babysat a young child who had cerebral palsy, and the PT would come in and I would follow through with some of the stretching and exercises for the parents who were super busy. And I just had this love of the engagement and the impact that something daily could really help her. I watched her grow into a beautiful young woman who went to college and had kids and got married. And so that was my start into neuro. And when I went to PT school, it was an immediate fixation. So I am a self-proclaimed love of neuro from a very, very long time ago, the creativity of it. Right now, I teach full-time in a DPT program at Central Michigan University. We have community outreach, we do all sorts of things. And so anything neuro, we're trying to get our students involved in. So that's where I am right now.
Well, it's funny because we do have parallels. I was just thinking of the very first person I took in the pool when I was like 10 at my mom's PT clinic had CP, and I followed her throughout ever. And, you know, you keep in touch with them even years later. So that's just so cool. So I love that. So today I was excited to invite you on this podcast because I heard you talk about the AFO-FES-CPG. And I was so impressed with how you took so much information and all of the amazing resources that the Academy provided and systematically helped me to understand how to use that information for patients and not get overwhelmed, because AFOs are like not my jam. And so I just was so impressed with that. That I was like, I want to have you on not only for the AFO-FES insight, but also how did you do that? How did you take such a great resource and really provide us the priority insights for therapists to actually be able to implement?
I wish I could take all the credit, but I have got to give a shout out to the Academy of NeuroPT, who those folks are simply amazing. As growing up, I've been a therapist for almost 30 years. And so when I graduated physical therapy school, I was so jealous that all my orthopedic friends, PT friends, had these CPGs they could follow. Right? And there was nothing for those of us in neuro. So everything was trial and error. We didn't have a lot of evidence back when I graduated. And so this is what's so amazing about what the Academy has done for us, both as educators and clinicians. And so they've really the ones that have done the work, and they're the ones that have made us more efficient and be able to spread the word so much easier. So it really is that team effort that makes the Academy membership so valuable. So I first wanted to give out a shout to them. They have taken the lead on developing these incredible resources to help both busy clinicians and busy educators to really be able to provide that to those who we are working with, whether it's students or patients. And there's just some great pearls for decision making based on the evidence. And I think that's going to be really beneficial for all of us who are busy to hear. So they have fact sheets, they have beautiful guidelines on AFO types and AFO components. They have a beautiful sheet on gait analysis. They have this beautiful one-page summary of what does the evidence say. So although I did dive into the actual 84-page document and I looked very detailed at what it had to say, they provided an incredible foundation for me to kind of dig right in and not be overwhelmed at trying to provide information to other people.
Yeah. And I think that it's fat. I thought it was bigger than 89 pages, to be honest. It just, when you see a CPG, it's like, blah, like, I don't even know where to start. And so you're right. I know they're working really hard on translating this information. And every time I turn around, I mean, 2 years ago, you know, they had some information on there, and then a year ago, then they added more information, and then you turn around and it just seems like they're adding more of these really user-friendly fact sheets. And I know that you're able to kind of look through those and then see, okay, how do we take that and make it into a case? But they really do phenomenal work, right? I agree with you. You can't say enough of great things about them.
CPGs have to be long. They have to be long because they provide the background and how do they go about, you know, looking at the articles? What were their criteria? What they do a beautiful job. If you really delve in, they talk about the cost benefit to the action items that they provide based on the evidence, because there's always a cost, you know, either way. And so they're very, very thorough. So if we really had questions, it's all there. For a busy clinician and a busy educator, you know, we take those fact sheets and it's a beautiful place to start.
Well, I think that's, you really just highlighted why it's so important to understand the emphasis of the CPGE. I mean, so just in regards to all the things that it included, you said something about cost benefit. Can you expand on that just a little bit?
Well, they talk about, so, you know, one of the examples they gave was if I put on a solid ankle AFO, you know, there might be some limitations to the type of balance activities I might be able to engage in because I don't have any motion at the ankle. So my ability to participate in deep, deep lunging might be, you know, might be withheld because of the AFO that I've chosen. So they really provide an idea of just looking at, if I use FES, I could potentially still have a rolled ankle if it's not switched on properly. So they just go back and forth between, when you think about these clinical decisions about whether you're going to use AFO or FES, we have to look at all of it, right? So my choice, I think clinically, I'm going to put someone in a solid ankle brace, an AFO, because I think that's what's going to promote mobility more. But realizing when I choose that, there might be some other things that have to give a little bit. And just being able to weigh those from a clinical decision-making point of view becomes really important.
Yeah, essentially it's trade-offs, right?
Exactly.
I mean, there's no perfect solutions. There's trade-offs, but we need, you know, that information to try to help us decide. Well, and it's us, right? It's the patient and the orthotist and us to all kind of make this decision together. So from a clinician standpoint, are there specific questions you think we should be asking or anything that we should really be emphasizing to try to help with that, our part on that?
Absolutely. You know, both of these interventions cost money. And both of these interventions cost time and investment. And so I think we need to do our due diligence to make sure that we're using healthcare dollars reasonably, that it is going to be a good choice for the client if they're paying out of pocket, because some of these things are not always covered depending on the insurance situation. So I think we should be asking, what is the value? So we, by knowing the evidence, by helping that drive our clinical decision making, you know, we can really keep that in mind and make the best choice for our clients. We want to be most on target, right? So if I've got kind of this one shot at an AFO that they're not, you know, we're not going to get an AFO every year paid for. So if I choose to decide on an AFO, I want to know that I'm using the evidence and the patient's needs and my clinical decision to the best possible, in the best possible way. So I'm making the decisions that's most on target for their recovery and their recovery goals. So I think that is probably something that should really drive us when we're using these CPGs from that standpoint. making sure it's the, you know, we're picking the right intervention for the right time, the right impairment, and the right outcomes.
Well, and that's a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure.
It's a lot of pressure when everyone's in different settings and your patients all present differently and they have different desires and I don't want to wear that. I'm going to wear that. I don't want to do that. I want to do that. I mean, already I feel like therapists are juggling so much and then all the options for AFOs just by themselves. And then whether you have access to FES and all those things, I mean, it's just so much pressure. So I think, you know, this is so helpful and I'm going to hit you up here to hit some of those CPG highlights because just little tidbits to get us started. And then for them to recognize, or for our therapists who aren't as familiar with all the different things ANPT has to offer, you know, what they can really find out there. So if you are looking for at the CPG, so let's just take a step back. So at the CPG, if you, again, we'll just kind of go through a few of them because I know there's so many.
There really are.
I'm going to have you highlight for us some of the most important, at least to you, that the takeaways that you kind of emphasized when you've presented on this topic.
Sure. And remembering, you know, I come from a long history of certain things that we were taught as therapists that we didn't have the evidence for. So these things may not be surprising. Maybe new clinicians are getting this in school, but I think for a lot of us, there are things that we just have this in our mind or we were taught a certain way. And so that's kind of the basis that I'm coming from, what I thought that were the clinical highlights. So number one is that, you know, when we think about, especially in acute care or acute inpatient rehab, I grew up saying, I don't want to brace anything because that's going to limit recovery. And one of the beautiful things that came out of the CPG was that's not true. That's not necessarily true. And that we want to think about either bracing or using FES so that our patients can engage more. So if I give somebody an AFO early on, because they can stand on that leg now, or they can participate in treadmill training or more high intensity walking or more intense balance interventions, then I should be doing that no matter where they are. You know, we used to limit that. I can think of so many patients that I would, well, I can't put a brace on them, but then I couldn't really do much with them because they didn't feel stable. So it limited what I could do from an intensity standpoint, because I didn't go ahead and just put the brace on. And we know when patients engage more in high intensity, we get better recovery. So that's probably one of the highlights for me was, let's get that brace on. Let's start FES to make them able to more engage in the higher intensity interventions that we know drive neuroplasticity and recovery. So that was probably one of the big ones for me.
And, you know, I just want to add to that because I would right there with you. I think we're in the same time frame.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no, you know, that won't allow the sensory input. But, you know, now I look back and I'm thinking, okay, even though they've had a stroke and they may have cognitive deficits, they know, because they're smart, not to shift over on a foot that's going to roll on them. So why would they put weight on that? Why would they shift over to that side? They're going to stay over where, you know, it's safe. And so, and we want this reinforced throughout and we want them moving more. And like you said, everything's about the sooner the better. And all the research points that way, right? And so being able to give them some stability early on and then recognizing this is going to change. Like as they progress, we change. So I just really think that's an important point.
Absolutely. And that's kind of the second one is that, you know, we need to continually be assessing. So remembering that, I don't know how many times, and maybe you've had this experience, I worked in outpatient neuro, that somebody came in with a brace and they said, yeah, I'm not walking very well. And the brace that was given to them a year ago, 6 months ago, no longer necessarily is working. And I think sometimes we just say, well, that's the brace you got. And that, so we just maybe not assess that as closely as we should to say, is it still the appropriate intervention for what you need? And working in a pro bono clinic where clients, they've had an acute, you know, inpatient rehab stay, they had some outpatient, but now it's 2 or 3 years later and they're coming to our clinic. Then it's like, wow, they've really atrophied. They've gotten more spastic. The ankle is tighter. And so the AFO or the FES application is now actually more detrimental to their walking because they're not walking or it hurts or they're not engaging or they're unsafe with it because of skin integrity. So I think that's the other piece that the AFO, the FES CPG really helped us with was there is evidence that when therapists go in and reassess, we have better outcomes, not only for giving an AFO out and making sure we're doing the appropriate training. People who have skilled PT training, when they get a new AFO or they get FES or there are changes to either one of those interventions, there's evidence to show that that skilled PT is necessary for those best outcomes. And that's really nice to hear. I think we all know it, but to have it in the evidence to make sure that, you know, we can get reimbursed, that we have necessity. So I think that was really good to hear. I mean, we all know it, but I think it was good to hear that the evidence is strong for that.
Well, and I think I wholeheartedly agree. And I don't think the therapists out there who are working their tails off hear it enough how important they are. But and how no one else is going to appropriately assess the length of their dorsiflexors with their knee extended to see, can they stand with that AFO and still have an ankle strategy? Or how is spasticity impacting, you know, that movement, and how is that impacting the use of the AFO and what adjustments could be used, and also anticipating change, right? You know, like in the beginning, we know they're here, but we anticipate they are going to improve and they're going to get better. And so, you know, what kind of recommendations, granted with the orthotist, but we're the only ones who can do the part that we do.
And so absolutely. Yeah. No doubt about that. And we should be doing that and not giving for granted that whatever was, you know, it might have been the right choice 6 months ago, but now things have changed. And we just see that over and over again. And we are the ones who are catching it. Nobody else is doing that. So I totally agree with you.
And I think that, so now saying that, reinforcing what we know and is the big push, intensity matters and we need more intensity. And this is so true. And we're constantly trying to figure out, we're figuring it out, right? We're trying to figure out in each setting, we're trying to figure out the best setup for this. So, you know, can you talk a little bit about the AFO, FES, CPG and how that impacts our ability to increase intensity with our patient population?
Yeah. So one of the clinical pearls that came away from is they did give some guidelines, just some really one-liners to help therapists think about their clinical decision-making. So the big one was, you know, consider that came from this whole review was that in general, slower walkers, they found better outcomes when they applied an AFO versus FES. And so when you think about slower walkers, you think about why are they walking slow? And for most of us in neuro, that means something is wrong with that stance phase, right? I do not want to put weight during stance phase on my affected leg. And so the AFO tended to provide that stability to allow me to engage in slower walking where I'm practicing that first gait training initially after my injury. So that is one statement that I thought, you know, that's a great clinical pearl to keep in the back of my head is that probably if I've got someone who's walking slow, there's something wrong with stance phase stability. And we know there's lots of problems in stance phase stability. It could be the ankle, it could be the knee, it could be the hip, it could be the trunk. But
yes, or all of the above.
Or all of the above.
What's the biggest heavy hitter?
If I know when I stand on my leg that my leg's going to invert or my knee's going to hyperextend, then I'm not going to want to put weight on that no matter how much you throw high intensity treadmill training at me. So that was fantastic to give us something to think about. And then the vice versa, saying that if someone is a pretty fast walker, you know, FES tended to show some good outcomes that way. And so not that it's either or, but really thinking about I should be considering FES for people who are walking faster. So that that was kind of a general recommendation, just something to think about as you move forward from what we read in the CPG.
Well, and that's extremely helpful. Like if you're in acute inpatient rehab and you're trying to justify to your admin or to your crew, like, well, we really need to try to be looking at implementing this sooner because then we can do as much as possible when they're here with us. And then if you're an outpatient helping justify purchasing FESs and putting that on your equipment list, because I mean, it makes sense, right? E-stim, getting recruitment of muscles when you're looking for propulsion and you're looking and you're at a different stage. So I just love that because then summarizing that kind of helps with the different settings and the therapists when they're trying to make the best decisions and recommendations for equipment. And again, the prioritizing, right?
Absolutely.
So that sounds awesome. And I think that overall picture of, I mean, it sounded like from the CPG, there's so many different things that it improves, right?
Right.
Absolutely. Especially when we're starting to think of quality of life.
Balance, gait speed. I mean, all of those things that, and again, remember the CPG, and this is something I loved about the author stating was their focus was for the CPG was to help us understand that how the level of ambulation, so my ability to walk, is a predictor of participation and disability. So they really wanted to understand how did AFO and FES fit into that? Because we all know how important ambulation is to disability, participation, quality of life, depression, engagement. And then also looking at how does the lower extremity impact our ability to ambulate to have better mobility? So it really ties into everything that the evidence is telling us, both for high intensity walking. We've got to start engaging in dosing more, but we can only do that when people feel safe to do that. So whether it's through AFO or FES application, that's what we really need to be thinking about that.
Or both, right?
Or both. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, I like to layer it
and
in.
That can change. Sure.
So absolutely. That's sometimes hard. So
yeah.
And we kind of touched on it a little bit, but was there anything I missed in regard like chronic versus acute?
Well, in this CPG, the one thing to know is that they had a different definition of chronic. So in the locomotor CPG, they considered chronic to be 6 months post TBI, spinal cord injury, or stroke. Here, the chronic phase was 3 months or more. So, you know, does that really matter? But just to understand what their definition of and how they viewed their research. And I think the other thing that I really liked hearing, I believe it because the evidence tells us, but that when we put an AFO on somebody, it does not necessarily hinder muscle activation. You know, and I think we talked about that, like that was our biggest worry when I graduated is I'm going to put a brace on and now they'll never use their ankles again or ankle strategy. But what the research shows is that that's not true. So that really gives us a lot of freedom to say, let's go for it. Because again, if you put a brace on and I can be highly engaged in something, that doesn't stop just because I have a brace on. I'm going to be pushing through my brace. I can still have ankle reactions regardless if I'm in that brace or not. So that was really good to hear because I wanted to believe it, but my old school PT brain said, are you sure? And they clarified and verified for us that, yeah, it does not hinder muscle activation. So don't be afraid to go for it early on if that's going to help engagement and intensity with your patient.
Actually, I just have to tell you how happy that makes me. I mean, well, just the concept, right? In theory, overall, like when I try to get someone aligned, they're like, oh, well, you know, I'm getting them aligned with different things to try and challenge them more, to try to make them work harder, to try to get more activation. And so, I mean, it makes sense that obviously if it was articulated and there's movement, you know, you increase muscle activation, but even if it's solid, there's still, because you're utilizing and you're challenging and you're putting input through there, no, it's not our top choice, but moving is our top choice.
Correct.
Which is that. So that's exciting. Like,
yeah. Yeah. We know that not moving doesn't work. So we need to move. We need to move and we need to be intentional. We need to think about intensity and just because you're braced does not mean that is not happening throughout that leg.
Absolutely. So that sounds awesome. So I was just looking, so improvements in gait speed. So all of the different pieces and that quality of life piece, you know, like right now it seems like the theme is, you know, capacity versus performance, but we're continuing to progress. But this CPG really has kind of addressed that whole big picture of quality of life, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And if you look at all the things, like you said, gait speed, mobility and dynamic balance, walking endurance, muscle activation, even gait kinematics, all choosing AFOFES based on the evidence can improve all of those things, which in the end improve participation for being out in the community and engaging with other people, which is, that's what life's all about.
Yeah. And that's our priority, quality of life. But really you need us, the therapist, throughout this whole process.
Yes. And that was clear in the CPG that for each one of those, it was reinforced that it's got to be skilled PT in that process. And it just doesn't stop. We just don't throw FES at them and send them out the door. There needs to be follow-ups. There needs to be check-ins. There needs to be measuring of outcome measures to make sure that what is working is, and there needs to be training. And so you can't just, the orthotist gave the brace and now they never come back to PT. That's not what the evidence is telling us. They need that skilled intervention and that skilled eye that we have for making sure things are working top notch. It's an investment, either way you look at it.
And I think this is where I'm all for, and I think we're on the same page with this, pre and post testing within your session. Like if you're not sure, you're using this guideline, it's giving you direction, but if you have something to try, just what did they walk the gait speed before, then add your choice and work together with the therapist or the patient, and then do your post testing and compare and use something objective to help guide you so that you feel more confident. So you're using the CPG and you're using your outcome measures to feel more confident.
Yeah. And I also think it's about engaging the patient. So we think about the rate of perceived stability scale, the rate of perceived exertion, looking at, how do you feel without the brace and with it, and trying to capture that, because they're the ones that are going to be making the investment when they do leave you finally. Is this AFO am I going to continue to use it when I am discharged from therapy? Am I going to continue to use the FES when I'm discharged? And so when you get their buy-in, of course, those outcome measures are going to be better. It's horrible to watch those things end up in a closet or I'm going to have to go find it in the back of my truck, because I just decided I'm never going to use it again because there wasn't the buy-in from the client as well. And I think that's an important piece that I've learned, that I have something in mind. I know what the evidence says, but I've got to have buy-in. So even the pre-post with your patients, they're subjective. How do you feel? How do you engage? What's going on from your standpoint, from their standpoint?
Stunning. Now I have a question for you.
Sure.
So they have that awesome one page little ditty. I mean, they have a lot of one pagers, but they have this one page with the circle, and then they have all these different, I think we're going to include it, the link in the notes.
Yes.
For this podcast, but they talk about spasticity, and what they have up there is they have, do not use AFO and FES if someone has spasticity, but that doesn't mean don't use it if they have spasticity. Can you clarify what does it mean?
Yes, there's a big red by that, right? Do not use it. So what it means is, we as therapists should not be treating just the impairment. So their point was that if your only reason for putting an AFO on somebody or doing FES is to reduce spasticity without all those other things that we do, gait and walking and balance and all that, you don't want to be doing AFO and FES were not found to be beneficial when we were just looking at, I want to reduce spasticity. So
right.
I think most of us think that way. At this point we understand spasticity pretty well, but it does make it sound like it does make it look at times, if you're not delving into that, okay, I can't use FES or AFO on someone with spasticity. That is not correct. We certainly can do that, but we have to look at these other things. I want to improve gait speed and my patient has spasticity. Could an AFO help me manage that spasticity to improve their gait speed? Potentially. Could FES? Yes, but our primary goal is not reduction of spasticity. Our primary goal is increasing gait speed. So as long as we're not applying an AFO or FES just to address decreasing spasticity or addressing spasticity, then you're good. You're good. And so that is definitely something, please, we don't want anybody thinking just because someone has spasticity, they should not consider AFO and FES. That's not what the CPG is saying.
Yeah. And I just want to, because the first time looking at that, if you don't read it carefully, you could misconstrue that, I think. And I think it just reinforces, like, we don't ever want to be just treating an impairment. No. Like, what's the point? Why would we do that? Correct. And if you're using the AFO to get them to walk better and they're walking faster and they're doing more intensive things, now that could result in improving the spasticity versus thinking about it the other direction. So not impairment-based. We want to be function-based. We want to be intensive. And I just want to make that clear.
Yeah. And there are things, when you go back to AFOs, if you remember the splinting, some of the splinting pearls was let's put a little divot in the AFO to spread the met heads a little bit, and maybe there doesn't mean you can't do any of that. We still do that with children, right? But the goal is to, that I can do that to address spasticity, but my goal is about mobility, balance, and gait speed.
Got you. Okay. Excellent. That's very helpful to me. So if you, I think I want to ask you a little bit about like buy-in and carryover.
Okay.
And what do you have any tidbits or did they have any thoughts in there in regards to, I actually you mentioned a little bit like the pre-post testing, I think is a good way to get carryover. Was there any other thoughts on that?
Well, I think telling our patients about what the evidence says, I think that's helpful that, seeing what do you see? I see that you're engaging more. I see that, by wearing this or using this, you are doing more and that's going to help you recover. So I think giving that evidence a little bit to our clients is really helpful. I love the pre-post. We use that so much. And in the case that that I teach my students with, we measured his gait speed right away and he's looked great. He was walking pretty good. On the way out, he was doing his happy dance. And, it was all about, he walked faster, he walked better, he walked with confidence. And so I think sharing those things, and I think sharing your clinical decision-making process with your patients. And so when I told him my clinical decision-making, he's like, I get what you're saying, but this is what I need. This is what I need now. This is what I want now. And that changed our direction. And so even just talking to the patient about what you're thinking and then bringing them into the conversation, if it's appropriate. I mean, it's always appropriate to bring them in the conversation, whatever level that might be. But in order for him to get buy-in, he needed to be able to bring his perspective into that. And I needed to listen to that because it wouldn't have been what I chose for him. But we were very successful in that respect. And even to this day, when we see each other on the street or at the gym, he is just overjoyed. He keeps telling me it was the best 5 visits he ever had, So it was, it's pretty joyful to hear that clinical decision-making with your patient was so powerful.
And what a great story, because we have to not be fearful of the patient disagreeing with us.
Correct.
And working through that, because in the end, if we decide to avoid that conversation, they're not going to do it no matter what. And so, but what was not for nothing, but I just have to add some things that you added in there was enhanced expectancy, right? You said, you told them how much great this is, how well this is going to work. And then just the knowledge of results, like, utilizing those outcome measures and making them obvious of what did you get before and incorporating them, giving them some autonomy in their choices, right? You just like dropped a whole optimal bomb in there of all these different things that helped, because the evidence can tell us you know, we want the evidence to guide us, but if we can't get the patient to be on the same level and we can't utilize other pieces, especially from motor learning, then, it, you know, there's just so much potential. It gets very exciting. Sorry.
It is very exciting. And with the evidence to back us up, you know, that gives me more confidence. And you're right. I mean, as therapists, especially neurotherapists, everything's trial and error. Everything is. And we can't be afraid. So you're going to, you know, I remember stepping my toe into the, I'm putting a brace on that acute stroke. I'm just going to do it. And all it was like, holy cow, like, right. This engaged them. And in the end, did they leave with the same AFO? You know, we had a prefabbed AFO that we tried. And by the end, they were doing so well, we considered that articulating AFO. And so that gave them more range of motion so that they were less inhibited. So it just, you know, not to be afraid of, I chose something or I started with FES and it wasn't enough support for that. Okay, then move on to the next clinical decision. But to not be afraid of putting your toe in with the evidence and seeing how it's working for you.
And it sounds like from you saying that, I mean, really you're driven by, okay, I'm watching you walk and, or not.
Yeah, right.
Be able to walk. Why can't they perform these functional tasks? What's going on? You know, that foot is dragging. So, right. You're kind of going through that process.
Yeah, we're always doing that, right? I mean, we should always be, why is that sit to stand so much worse than it was this morning? That's exactly what it is really looking at it. The observation is just so important. And the evidence tells us that we need skilled PTs to have the best outcomes. And that's because we're great observers and we're great problem solvers and we're great investigators. So,
well, geez, you know, I mean, you can look at it the good way, like, oh my gosh, we have to be able to observe and we have to be able to analyze movement and then we have to know the evidence and. But also just, it's so exciting because there's so much information out there. And if you feel like, oh, this is really interesting, I wish I had more time to go look at this website, then I always say, send a student to do it.
That's a great idea.
Right? Because the students already are being taught this. Plus, if they're there for a clinical, have a list of things and have them go check it out and pull up that little chart and problem solve themselves through it and explain it to you, because, you know, none of us know everything. And so we just have to help each other.
I agree. And what we did at school is I have all those laminated. I have all those fact sheets laminated in the classroom. They're just hanging. Like, we talked about it in this lab. It's hanging there. So when you start to do some clinical decision making for we do a community partner program and you think you're starting to think about FES or AFO, go back to that. So having those things laminated in a place where you can see them, you don't have to have the CPG memorized. That's the beauty of what ANPT has done in those task forces, making the one pagers so that it's a quick look. It's a quick reminder. You have the things in your mind, like those big clinical pearl statements, slow walkers, fast walkers, but they've put that on paper for you so that when you're thinking what kind of AFO, you just walk through that. It's a beautiful thing to laminate those one pagers.
Well, and thank you for that, because there's no way I'm going to remember.
No.
But the lamination, that's really smart, because again, I was just so impressed with how they broke out the different types of AFOs,
yes,
the different adjustments you could make, and the FES for what we know with the pros, the cons. I can't remember everything they had in those columns, but just incredibly well done with even pictures. I like pictures, so they had the pictures of them. So you guys, yeah, if you haven't checked it out yet, it is so worth your time. I think they even have, you know, they have more information on there about other things as well. So.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at it, they had talk about trim lines. They talk about a posterior versus anterior shell. They look at ground reaction AFOs versus non-ground reaction. They looked at prefab designs. I mean, they give the pros and cons. This is a higher cost if you do a custom. So it really is a beautiful one-stop shop kind of thing that just the efficiency with which we can put our clinical decision-making into gear is fantastic.
It's only two pages. Like each of those are.
Yeah.
So just FYI, all those right. things on two pages with pictures, and you've sold me, no doubt.
Yeah, I remember creating those documents way back when as an educator, and those are much more beautiful, you know.
I know they are.
Like they're reading the minds, right? They're reading our minds of what we really need. And so that was the other thing with the CPG. I think why they were so successful and why they're giving us exactly what we want is because they gave a survey to both patients and clinicians and what were clinicians looking for. And I don't know if they've done that with other CPGs. I don't know. But for this one, they asked clinicians, what is it that you need us to review for you? And they did exactly what the stakeholders wanted, which was, I want to know more about the clinical decision-making process. And that's exactly what they delivered. So again, just a shout out to those task force, they're full of, I mean, I would love to just add up how many years of experience on that task force. Like, I just think between you and I think we have 60, you add another 7 or 8 people. I mean, just think it's hundreds of years of clinical experience that's going into these CPGs. And it takes a lot of work and a lot of commitment, and they've just done a great job.
I know all those task force, I mean, truly a shout out. But I also agree it's a team approach. And I think that was brilliant in regards to putting out the call for clinicians to answer. And I know that when clinicians get surveys, it's like, oh, because they're so busy. But when you have the opportunity and it's something that you're delving into, their insight can make all the difference to truly translate the knowledge into something that's going to be beneficial for them. So we need the researchers hardcore, but we need the others. So I think that's just amazing.
Yeah, it's knowledge translation at its finest. You know, it really is.
So let's because we're getting close here on our time, even though I could talk with you all day, but why don't you give us some of your top 3 actionable takeaways, and then maybe we can sneak in a little, talk us through a little case.
Okay. Yes. So I would say that actionable takeaways, get your patients mobile right away. So whatever that means and whatever that looks like, whether it's AFO or FES, that probably is one of the biggest take homes. We know that mobility and intensity drive recovery. So if the AFO is the thing that's going to get them up and moving, then put the AFO on. If it's FES that's going to do it, then put the F, you know, whatever it is, start with a prefab, go from there. And remember that wearing an AFO does not hinder muscle activation. So we don't have to be worried about that. That's probably one of my first ones. I think having some items at your clinic to trial that make it easier. So, you know, it's hard if you don't have prefab AFOs. I think having items there. So if you go and look at the main categories of prefab AFOs, I think having those ready so that it's like, okay, I'm going to try this. And then, we're going to try ground reaction. I think having that stuff easy access. Let's just throw it on. Oh, that didn't work. Let's try another one. Or same thing with FES. I think having the equipment that is easy to use, that you don't have to go back to your physics book to remember how to use FES, I think that's really helpful. So again, if you can determine the impact before you start ordering these things or making that big clinical decision, having those things handy and useful is important.
And I would just add that, like, prefab AFOs, heel wedges, are not expensive and they're huge as in a benefit. Prefab AFOs, like contact orthotists, people sometimes donate things. You can find really cheap ones. I mean, I really don't think that's a huge investment, but for a huge, potentially huge outcome.
Yeah. And I think local orthotists will always have throwaways, right? Or this patient, it didn't work, or this wasn't quite right. Or I think that they can offer, I mean, you might be able to get freebies if you just something to try that you can work with to do that pre and post outcome measure. Like, holy cow, this made a difference. Now let's go to the next step. Do we need to order that AFO? Do we need to get that e-stim? I think that's really helpful. And I think the other one that was really impactful to me was this idea of slow versus fast walkers, and just really recognizing that even if someone is not walking well, maybe they don't even have a gait speed, but if they're not standing on that leg, the AFO can help provide that stability, and that we might be thinking about FES for those faster walkers. And not that it's true and blue, slower walkers need AFOs and FES, you know, would need for the faster walkers. I know that's not, it's not hard, a hard edge there, but just getting into that thinking of, don't be afraid to put an AFO on someone who's not even walking. Don't be afraid of that at all, because that's going to provide the stability to help them start wanting to walk, in whether it's a treadmill or on ground or whatever that looks like.
So the big heavy hitters is like, sooner the better, get something on them. We're not going to hinder muscle activation. Let's start looking, even if you have your students call, get prefab AFOs, eSTIM units, but look at your setting for those slower walkers. Definitely, if I had to prioritize, you're looking at those prefab AFOs or trying to get some of those pieces. And then if you're an outpatient, I'm just saying that in general, but or people who are walking faster, explore a little bit more about what kind of units you could have, knowing that there's going to be an overlap.
Would that be exactly? That's a great synopsis, JJ.
So just as a little final thing, I'm really curious about any words of wisdom or inspiration you'd like to leave with this audience.
Well, I think in general, it's this idea of that, you know, working with neuro and really working with any patients, you know, we can't be afraid of trial and error. I think we can let the evidence guide us. And had I stuck to my guns with Bill, I'd be pushing FES, but he would have never used it. So I think trial and error is a part of what we need to get used to, and not being uncomfortable that we're going to use the best evidence, we're going to use patient perspective, we're going to use our clinical decision making to drive it. But in the end, if one thing doesn't work, we can't get afraid of that. And then just to keep trying things, because that's really what it's all about.
I love that. Be creative. Be creative. Well, thank you so much, Jamie.
Thanks for having me.
All the time we have today, but I appreciate your insight and clinical takeaways related to integrating the use of the AFO and FES. It's been really helpful. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of NeuroNavigators by MedBridge. Please be sure to subscribe and listen to more of our episodes on Spotify or your favorite podcast platform, and at MedBridge.com. If you're listening outside of the MedBridge catalog and would like to access the bonus resources and receive continuing education credit, simply log into your MedBridge account and search for this episode to find the accreditation details. NeuroNavigators also listens to you. If there's a particular clinician that you'd like to hear from, or if you have a clinical question or challenge that you'd like to see addressed on this podcast, please let us know by leaving a comment on our Instagram posts or by emailing podcasts@medbridge.com. As we wrap up today, remember that your dedication makes a difference. We appreciate you being here to navigate these topics and hope you enjoyed our deep dive into everything neuro. See you next time.